Hello, it's Friday, and welcome to the Zogby Report, real and unscripted. This is our podcast that we do weekly. It features me. I'm John Zogby, the pollster, and my son, Jeremy, my son and business partner. And we mainly focus on some politics, but obviously the news of the day, and there's no bigger news these days than COVID-19. Jer, how are you this week?
Doing well. I thought the baby was supposed to come on the official due date, which was yesterday, but our son, Theo, was born on the 27th of September, so maybe it's more fitting that Isabella will come on March 27th, and of course, that just makes everything easier to remember and plan, right? But hey, Dad, we're going to get into the biggest story, but before we do that, it's like, oh, by the way, we have an election going on amidst all of this. And so why don't you go into the latest of what's happening on the ground with Bernie, Biden, and Trump's approval and how he's seen in general?
Well, the unique thing is that really nothing is going on the ground. It's all going on in the air. And so this is a very unique presidential campaign because it's being carried out the way we're forced to carry out our lives in podcasting in the basement, staying at home, social distancing for the candidates, zero crowds, no shaking hands, certainly no kissing babies. And so with that said, Joe Biden, who is clearly the leader and, you know, beyond odds on favorite, he is piling up the delegates on a weekly basis and should be the nominee of the Democratic Party. Biden has taken to a studio in his basement where he is broadcasting his messages to supporters to keep the campaign alive. And his message is that there was a lack of presidential leadership by Donald Trump. This is what a real president would do. But that's only part of the story, because we have a number of cross currents going on here. The first is that even among Biden's ardent supporters and donors, there is a fear that he is not up to the job. Same kinds of fears that they had before the South Carolina victory. And there is worry that he's rambling, that he's unfocused, that he doesn't finish sentences, that he looks old. Same sorts of things that we're hearing. I think what's particularly intriguing, and I carefully choose that word intriguing, is that videos are being circulated that are composites of Joe's gaffes during his broadcast that are an attempt to portray a candidate that's not all there. And it seems to be coming from one source, and that is the Bernie bros, so to speak. Not Bernie Sanders himself, who has indicated that he will embrace Joe Biden as a nominee, even though he still wants to debate the issues, but from the ardent zealots that support Bernie Sanders. So that's one cross current that's taking place. Second cross current taking place is, and this one's pretty overt because of the source, and that is that there's a little boomlet that is suggesting and even laying odds that Andrew Cuomo, governor of New York, will be the nominee at a brokered convention, that Biden won't be up to the task, that maybe something will even happen to Joe Biden and his health. And the promotion of Andrew Cuomo, who by pretty much everybody's standards has risen to the occasion as governor of New York and done so in a signal of confidence, with a knowledge, with a level of frustration that so many of us feel shown some real leadership. The fascinating thing, Jer, is that almost all of these articles promoting Andrew Cuomo are coming from the National Review and the Federalist and from very conservative organs that have in their interests to undermine Joe Biden and the Democratic Party. And so there's a lot going on while it seems that nothing is going on. Meanwhile, finally, the president. President's enjoying clearly the best job approval ratings of his presidency. His Real Clear Politics average is about 47. Last two or three polls, 48, 49, 50 job approval. And he's getting high marks, a high of 60% approval on his handling of the coronavirus. That's by Gallup, but generally speaking, settling into 51, 52% approve the way he's handling the coronavirus, 45% that don't. But volatile situation, and the president is still mixing things up with politics and name-calling and singling out reporters. And so as far as politics are concerned, for the most of us under the radar screen, but for those of us who are watching it pretty carefully, there's some fascinating cross currents. What do you think?
Well, you know, I've been saying since 2013, I believe it was 13 when Cuomo came out with the SAFE Act. I mean, it was somewhere between 2012 and 2013. And for our listeners who aren't fellow New York Staters or maybe don't know what that is, following, I believe it was the Newtown massacre, Cuomo really jumped on the gun control issue and made his famous statement, "You don't need 15 rounds to kill a deer," and got the SAFE Act passed, and that had a whole bunch of provisions that came along with it. You couldn't get a magazine for a semi-automatic or for, you know, any firearm that carries more than seven, I think it is, that was cut off. Seven was the magic number. And you just saw a lot of other events. I mean, he certainly paid a lot more attention to upstate New York. He understood that upstate New York is key in New York State in terms of the votes. And I just always saw this ambition for the presidency. And I would bring that up, and people would tell me, you know, you're not really going to do too well with an ethnic candidate, you know, because he's Italian American and he's from New York and he can really only represent the Northeast. But I saw it. I saw something there. I saw the fire in his eyes. And so I'm surprised by the news that you share, because I didn't catch that. But it does make a lot of sense, because he does have that fire. You mentioned about Biden. You know, you and I watched those videos. A friend of ours sent some of those clips. And, you know, of course, our friend is, make no bones about it, a big Bernie supporter. But, you know, it's hard to imagine. Is there really any way you can splice those clips to make them look worse than they are? I mean, even if you're just capturing those few seconds in which Biden is either doubting himself, appears to be confused. I, you know, one could say, well, there's the fuller picture. What did he say 5 seconds before that? What did he say 5 seconds after that? Or what was the context? By any way you put it, it looked bad. I felt a lot of pity for the man. It was very sad to watch. It did look like somebody who could have the beginnings of some form of dementia, whether that is Alzheimer's or not, I don't know. But when was the last time we saw that? You've pointed this out before in the past. The last time you saw that was Reagan, early on in the 80s, early on in his presidency. You and others were a lot of other people were noticing some signs there. So is that what is going on with Biden? Is this Bernie just, or his people really just trying to unfairly plant something? Or the key question is, does it really have merit?
So here's my assessment of it, and then we'll move on to the coronavirus, if you'd like. But I did meet with Ronald Reagan March 1st, in fact, 1985. And my impression was very clear that he was out of it, that there was something wrong. His timing was off. He was glossy-eyed. It wasn't that he did not want to be with us. It was that he was physically there, but otherwise was not there. And it was very noticeable. And of course, it turned out that after he left the presidency, it was released that he had advanced Alzheimer's. I will attest to the fact, without being a physician or an expert at all, he certainly looked like that at the beginning of his second term. In terms of Joe Biden, I'm not going to be blind to this, but I'll suggest an alternative scenario, and that is that Joe has always been on 78 RPM, even when the rest of us are on 33 and a third. Those are long playing records, incidentally, for the those of you that don't know. So there's part of Joe that has to slow down, but his mind is going faster than his capacity for his mouth to keep up. And I think that he gets confused, as anybody would get confused. Again, I'm not trying to gloss over anything, but I will suggest that when he's on script, and any politician has to stay on script, otherwise you'll go crazy saying the same thing over and over and over and over again from rally to rally to broadcast to broadcast. But you have to stay on script, and that's the biggest difficulty that his advisors say, is that he doesn't pay attention to the teleprompter, doesn't pay attention to the prepared speeches, and confuses himself. That's how
I
see it.
Let me just ask one more question, and then we'll transition, because this is a key question. You said that the Federalist, the National Review, among others, are pushing this notion for Cuomo. Well, I mean, what? How do they benefit from that? I mean, Cuomo would actually be a top contender, in my view. So what's the story behind the conservative media, or aspects of the conservative media, pushing the story of a brokered convention with Cuomo as the Democratic candidate?
That's a very good question. And that is to roil up things in the Democratic Party, so that by raising questions about Biden, that would ensure conflict at the Democratic convention. Any conflict at the convention can hurt the party and split the party going into the fall. So you not only have the Bernie Biden split, which, you know, I think at least as far as the two candidates are concerned, can easily be healed, maybe not so easily healed between Biden supporters and Bernie's supporters, but to throw a whole new element in there among, say, the elite or the establishment of the party, that, hey, we don't even like our nominee. We think that there's somebody better. All that does is sow discord within the party. And the obvious, here's Joe Biden presumably coming into Milwaukee to the convention in July with enough delegates. But here's a wing, establishment wing of the party saying, to hell with the voters who voted. We don't think Joe is the right guy. So that's simply a way of sowing confusion and discord within the party.
So moving on to the big story, and keeping in line with the theme of last week of crossing the Rubicon, I'm going to start off with a quote. And there's a famous quote in history that says, there are decades when weeks happen, and then there are weeks when decades happen. And so immediately after we had our podcast last Friday, I was making sure, you know, what I was talking about, that I was staying on top of, what I was anticipating. Within 24 hours, there were two very big stories that I saw. Now, I don't know as far as where this all goes. To me, what's important is that it's being talked about. And so I'm going to go through just a few things. The first thing was the Department of Justice, the DOJ. It was reported on Friday that last Monday they were going to go to Congress and they were going to ask Congress for the powers to detain people indefinitely who were deemed as a threat without trial. That means suspension of habeas corpus. That's something very key to look out for. Now, to my knowledge, Congress hasn't granted the DOJ those powers. There was actually some backlash, thank God. Maybe even a bigger story than that was something that came out of Newsweek either the same day or the very next day. And I would encourage all listeners to look at this story, because Newsweek usually isn't the kind of magazine to put out these kind of articles. But there was an article over the weekend on COG, continuity of government. Now, maybe our older listeners would recall that in a Cold War context in which, you know, during the 50s, let's say during the Eisenhower's presidency and beyond into the 60s and 70s and 80s, during the Cold War, there was this notion that if there was a nuclear strike, government would have to move to an underground bunker, and the military would be given powers to rule above ground, and government would also continue below ground. However, this one was put in the context of civil unrest as a result of the breakdown of the supply chains because of COVID-19, as well as perhaps because of some increasing economic shocks. So I would highly urge all of our listeners to look at that article. It's very opaque in its language, but there are some paragraphs that really jump out. Another thing I'm going to talk about is the Federal Reserve and what they announced. This almost sounds like a pun, but I believe he's the New York Federal Reserve Board of Governor Kashkari. Cash, right? Kashkari said that the Federal Reserve has unlimited amounts of cash. Basically, they can print as much cash as they want, and they have signaled the markets on Wall Street that they will buy whatever they need to buy. Whatever it takes is the moniker that's floating around in Europe with the European Central Bank and here with the Federal Reserve, meaning that if the stock market continues to tank, and by the way, there was an upsurge. I think it went up 1,500 points. But if it continues on a downward trajectory like we saw over the past week or much of the past week, the Fed would come in and would buy the stocks. The same with the bond market. The Fed would come in and buy all the U.S. Treasury bonds. The same with, let's say, the Department of Energy, that if oil, the price of oil collapses to a point where, you know, it's very worrisome, the Federal Reserve will outright nationalize the Department of Energy. And, you know, basically beyond that, anything that needs a bailout, anything and everything, they will be there to be the main buyer and holder of this. And they also hired BlackRock, the nation's or the world's biggest hedge fund managing company, to advise on this. So I wasn't off last week when I said that we were crossing the Rubicon, because those three things alone that I laid out are truly unprecedented, at least in my life. I'm confident in saying in American history. So, Dad, I want to get your take on it from a pollster's point of view, a trend spotter's point of view. a historian's point of view, but also you're going to be the grandfather of Isabella when she's born any hour or day now. And how do you make of all of this?
Okay. I grew up during the Cold War, the heat of the Cold War, and there was always intrigue and always suspicion. And it's good to be suspicious. As a historian, we've had alien and sedition acts and provisions in various legislation beyond that during the Cold War that allowed for concentration camps and suspension of habeas corpus. So none of this shocks me or is new. Also, because I grew up doing it during the Cold War, there has been a kind of a fundamental belief that we do have checks and balances and that a president's power can be curtailed. We used to talk in the late 60s about the imperial presidency under Johnson and then in particular Nixon. And then we saw some of that come undone with the War Powers Act and then also with Watergate, the actual forced resignation of Richard Nixon. But where are we at today in terms of, let's call it on one hand, a power grab, on the other hand, the ability for a president to, in effect, become an absolute monarch and for institutions, call them the deep state, to take control over our lives. I'm not there yet. I'm not there yet. But I think it is cause for concern because of the underlying cause of it. And the underlying cause is a global pandemic that blindsided so many people, blindsided our institutions, was doubted by our president initially, and then everything after that is playing catch up. And then by the obvious, and despite the wonderful efforts of people in government, in healthcare, on the front lines, the first responders, it's a battle right now to get on top of this. But at least where we stand right now, I'm hopeful that voluntary quarantines, the voluntary changes in our behavior, I'm hopeful that that will be sufficient. But I am worried that it may not be, and that there is there could be more federal encroachment in our lives.
I follow up because, you know, I said unprecedented, and of course you laid out wonderfully the cases in which this did happen. So let me clarify, right? We know a lot of readers of American history know it was John Adams who, under his mm-hmm. presidency, passed the Alien and Sedition Acts. Of course, Lincoln shut down newspapers and had those arrested who were questioning his efforts in the Civil War, and they were jailed without trial. Of course, we remember that it was FDR who interned second and third generation Japanese Americans who really had no ties to, if zero ties to the emperor, the fascist emperor in Japan. So it's been there. But when you see it cascading and on so many levels, I mean, let us not forget that under the Obama presidency, and I don't know what was the actual event that prompted this, but he had the executive order signed that was called the National Defense Authorization Act, which gave the executive branch the power to detain those who deemed a threat and held indefinitely in detention without trial. And so now not only do you have the executive branch that can do it, but now you have, and this almost sounds Orwellian, the Department of Justice. Maybe they should change their name. The DOJ calling for this. Now, again, thank God they weren't granted this, but stay tuned on that. And then now new talks of the continuity of government, but especially the mentioning of the Federal Reserve and their outright admission in the fact that they will be there to buy anything. You put all of these together, and that's where I argue this is unprecedented. So we are in 100% lockstep agreement that hopefully all of this will go away. And there's probably some good reason to believe that it would, because there are a lot of people within government that wouldn't put up with this. And there are certainly a lot of citizens in this country that would not want to put up with that. So if these measures were put through, they would have a handful. But as far as the voluntary quarantine, what I'm observing, and I think Italy and France are key in how this plays out, is it starts out like this. And by the way, I see New York following the same path. It starts out with, an official encouraging people, stay home. And then the cases, regardless, the cases are going to spread because it's a highly infectious disease, whether they stay home or not, right? If you're under quarantine and you live in an apartment building, the disease is going to spread. It's going to at least spread among your family if you're locked indoors. But it starts off with the officials calling for people to stay home. And then it turns into, we're going to close non-essential businesses. And then still the disease spreads, and then it turns into, now we go into full lockdown or mandatory stay at home. And then as the disease continues to spread, it goes to martial law. That's where Italy is at right now. That's where France is at right now. We are somewhere halfway between that in New York State. I can't speak for other states because I don't live there and I'm not following as closely as I am New York State, but it looks pretty, I don't want to say obvious, but pretty likely that maybe next week, as early as next week, will come the official orders of the lockdown. And once the lockdown comes, martial law is just around the corner. That's my take on it. How our listeners respond to that or react to that, of course, we're always interested in hearing the feedback. We would like to know, what do you think? What do you think of all of this, everything that we've talked about? I'm going to say on my end that is a wrap. Dad, is there anything else you want to say?
Yeah, I want to say, okay, millennial. I'm not going to paint that bleak a scenario. The governor has said that there will not be martial law on his watch. On the other hand, New York has little over half of the known cases in the United States, all within the greater New York area, and this thing is spreading. All the promises that this is going to get far worse before it gets better are taking place right now. And this is the time when difficult choices have to be made about the exercise of power. And if it takes that, if voluntary social distancing is not sufficient, then efforts have to be made to stop this virus in its tracks. And so that's how I would leave it. And hopefully, next week, we'll start off by talking about how beautiful little Isabella is.
Absolutely. We'll continue to track the situation as always, and we'll see you next week. Bye, everyone. Bye, Dad.
Bye. Bye, Dad.